Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Monday, September 30th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
U.S. futures gain as the White House plays down reports it's looking to limit Chinese investment.
Protests hit Hong Kong for a 17th weekend as authorities brace for more unrest tomorrow.
It is a big week for the U.S. economy. Traders prepare for monthly payroll data and remarks from a dozen Fed officials.
President Trump demands to meet the anonymous whistleblower in the impeachment inquiry, plus more about the latest NYPD officer who died in the line of duty. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Bushka. Coming up in sports, the Yankees are all set for the postseason, while the Giants may be all set at the quarterback spot.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures gaining to start the week. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 11.5 points, Dow futures up 96, and NASDAQ futures up 42. The DAX in Germany, little change. CAC in Paris up 0.1%, FTSE 100 down about 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32, yield 1.69%. NYMEX crude oil's down 0.5% or 29 cents at $55.62 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.8% or $12 to $14.94.30 an ounce. The euro 1.0934 against the dollar, yen 107.89. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with the latest developments in the trade war. The Trump administration is issuing a partial denial to our report last week that the White House is considering imposing limits on U.S. investment in China. Sean Donnan broke the story for Bloomberg. He has more from our 99.1 studios in Washington.
Talking to folks inside and around the administration, what we're hearing is that this could drag on for months. I had one source tell me that the deliberations are about halfway done. But at the same time, the National Economic Council, which is what Larry Kudlow runs over there at the White House, is still working on an assessment of the exact potential economic impacts of a move like this. A lot of money involved. And they're going to have to think hard and long about what exactly they go after.
Well, we reported Friday that the Trump administration was considering delisting Chinese companies from U.S. exchanges, imposing limits on U.S. government pension funds investing in Chinese markets, and putting caps on the value of Chinese companies included in indexes managed by U.S. firms.
Now, a spokeswoman for the Treasury tells us there are no plans to stop Chinese companies from listing on U.S. exchanges. It's a denial of one measure under consideration, though the Treasury statement did not address other items being discussed. All this comes ahead of key trade negotiations scheduled for next week. Begin more from Bloomberg's Selena Wang in Beijing.
This does weigh on trade talks. This comes at a very sensitive time. And regardless of how far along talks about limiting U.S. portfolio funds to China actually got, the fact that these discussions were taking place at all just highlights how tense the U.S. and China relationship is right now. And these discussions also further a view among some hawks in China here in Beijing that the U.S., Washington, is trying to contain China's economic rise.
The White House hosts Chinese Vice Premier Liu He for trade talks October 10th, just days before another increase in U.S. tariffs is set to take effect.
U.S. stocks slumped Friday after the report, and today equities in Asia followed suit. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The CSI 300 closed lower by 1%. Stocks in Hong Kong rose, however, along with those in South Korea. In Japan, key indexes were dragged lower by automakers and pharmaceutical stocks. The offshore yuan was slightly firmer amid indications that high-level trade talks are still scheduled for next week, while the Korean won rebounded in late trade after touching a three-week low as the nation's industrial output slid more than expected. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Julia, thank you. In Hong Kong, it was another weekend of violent protests with more demonstrations likely tomorrow as China marks the 70th anniversary of communist rule. Bloomberg's Stephen Engel has the very latest from the streets of Hong Kong.
Police firing tear gas. They used water cannon with blue dye to help identify some of the more hardcore protesters who tried to storm the Legislative Council building and the government offices. They were throwing Molotov cocktails as well as any projectiles they could find, including bricks. They also set up a barricade, several barricades, and lit them on fire. It was a violent evening. Tuesday is a public holiday, and Protest organizers say they want to rally again here in Hong Kong. However, police have banned that rally. Nevertheless, the last time we saw a ban by the police, the protesters showed up anyway. Stephen Engel, Bloomberg News, Hong Kong.
All right, Stephen, thank you. In Germany today, we have data showing an improved labor market. The number of people out of work decreased by 10,000 in September. Germany's unemployment rate now stands at 5%, nearly a record low.
Here in the U.S., it's a busy week for economic data, including the government's monthly jobs report. Let's get a preview now from Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice.
Economists surveyed by Bloomberg are forecasting a moderate gain of 140,000 non-farm jobs in September. There are, however, signs of further moderation. Data from the Conference Board show the share of workers who say jobs are plentiful is at a three-month low. Also on this week's data calendar, figures on business hiring from payroll provider ADP and ISM data on factories and services. Vinnie Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinnie, thanks. We also hear from about a dozen Federal Reserve officials this week. With more on that, here's Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Investors will be listening for any remarks about the strength of the U.S. economy and the path of interest rates. Tomorrow, Chicago Fed President Charlie Evans speaks at a conference hosted by the Bundesbank in Frankfurt, and St. Louis Fed President Jim Bullard has a community banking conference. Later in the week, Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester will take part in a panel discussion on inflation with former Fed Chair Ben Bernanke. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Charlie, thank you. We'll also hear from Fed Vice Chairman Richard Clarida this week. He speaks on the economy and monetary policy Thursday evening, just ahead of Friday's payrolls report.
As Credit Suisse continues to come under scrutiny for spying on the head of its wealth management unit, it looks like CEO Tidjane Thiam could emerge unscathed. Sources tell us the board of Credit Suisse is backing Thiam ahead of a crucial meeting today to determine who will take blame for the scandal. Still, it's unclear whether any board-level executives will be punished.
We have another bankruptcy in the U.S. retail industry. Forever 21 has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in Delaware. The company plans to keep operating while it works out plans to pay creditors and turn around the business. And futures this morning are higher. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It's 5:07 now on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to tell us more what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Donald Trump called for the Democrat leading the House impeachment inquiry to be questioned for treason and demanded to meet the anonymous whistleblower who is a key witness in the investigation. More from Bloomberg's Mark Mills.
In a series of Sunday night Twitter posts, the president called for a treason investigation into House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, saying the California Democrat had lied in perhaps the most blatant and sinister manner ever in the House of Representatives. That came after Trump called for Schiff to immediately resign. Trump wants to meet the whistleblower who raised concerns over his controversial July phone call with the Ukrainian president. The whistleblower has the legal right to remain anonymous. Trump also wants the identities of individuals who gave information cited in the whistleblower report. Mark Mills, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Joe Biden's campaign implored the media to stop booking Rudy Giuliani, who's responded on Twitter that the former vice president was arrogant and entitled in demanding to silence him. According to a letter from Biden's campaign, frequent appearances on TV by President Trump's personal lawyer are increasingly unhinged and peppered with desperate lies about Biden and his son. Giuliani on ABC's This Week discussed the accuracy of the whistleblower's complaint that launched an impeachment inquiry last week.
He could have heard it wrong. That's why it's hearsay. Because it's unreliable, inherently unreliable.
That's what the investigation
unlike
is
him, what unlike is. Him, please, can I just make my point?
You've been making your point.
No, I haven't.
ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. A cash-strapped Cory Booker says he could see his presidential campaign end by tomorrow unless he raises $1.7 million.
We're running a great election to win, but we can't continue this without more support. I won't continue this unless I can look people in the eye and say we have a chance to win it. And so if you believe in me, this is the time to help, because if without it, we shouldn't be in this race.
An NYPD officer grappling with an armed man died early Sunday in the Bronx after being shot three times, possibly with his own gun. Police say the 27-year-old suspect also died after officers fired at him. The NYPD identified the fallen officer as 33-year-old Brian Mulkeen. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All righty, Michael. Thank you. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The postseason is alive and ready for the Yankees, who fell in the season finale 6-1 to the Rangers, who closed out their stay at the ballpark in Arlington with an impressive performance from starter Lance Lynn. He fanned 10 and picked up his career best 16th win. Masahiro Tanaka, the losing pitcher, falling to 11-9. The Yankees finished with 103 wins, second most in the American League behind the best record in baseball, the Astros. Yankees host the Twins in game one of the ALDS on Friday. Mets up and down season culminated with a 7-6 walk-off win versus Atlanta in 11 innings. Still bittersweet though, says manager Mickey Callaway.
This is going to stink going home and having to watch all this. I remember doing it last year. I've never done it as a manager, having to sit there and watch the playoffs. It's not so it's an emotional day. I love the way we won the game. The next month is going to suck.
Mets finished with a winning record, 10 games above 500, and showcased future rookie of the year, Pete Alonso. For the NFL, the Giants are back at 500.
Haskins takes a shotgun snap. He's back to throw. He's under pressure. He throws it over the middle. Intercepted. He threw it late. Picked off by Peppers. Putting it on the right side to the 10th spot. Touchdown, Giants. Jabril Peppers.
Westwood won. It helps rookie quarterback Daniel Jones when the defense delivers points as New York clobbered the Redskins 24-3 to improve to 2-2. Jones threw for 225 yards and a touchdown as the torch has officially been passed from Eli Manning. Redskins are 0-4. Dallas lost their first game coming up short in New Orleans while the Jets had Sunday off. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, Rob, thanks. And how much would you pay for a jersey that LeBron James wore in high school? A sweat-stained jersey that James wore as a teen in 2002 is being auctioned through October 19th. So far, early bidding's up to $37,000. Golden Auction says 5% of the proceeds will go to the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning. And sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Let Burden create innovative tax solutions to benefit your family and your business. Visit burdenllp.com. Burden Accountants and Advisors. They listen, they solve, they do.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are moving higher this morning. S&P futures up 11 points. Dow futures up 93. NASDAQ futures up 39. The DAX in Germany is little changed. 10-year Treasury down 6/30 seconds. Yield 1.70%. Yield on the 2-year 1.64%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.6% or 35 cents at $55.56 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.9% or $13.30 at $14.92.80 an ounce. The euro 1.0931 against the dollar, yen 107.95. In China, we have data showing manufacturing improved in September. Here are the details is Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis in Hong Kong.
The official PMI showed an uptick in new orders, although still in contraction. And on a positive note, the Caixin PMI of smaller private firms jumped to 51.4. That was the highest reading in more than a year. That said, many economists we spoke to said it doesn't get better from here, most likely a little worse. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Adam Schiff, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, says Congress expects to hear very soon from a whistleblower whose complaints spurred an impeachment inquiry against President Trump. It comes as the president demands to meet the anonymous whistleblower. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman says the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi was a heinous crime, but he denies allegations that he ordered the killing. A weekend early season snowstorm brought heavy, wet snow and high winds to Montana, closing roads, downing trees, and causing scattered power outages. In the NFL, the Giants beat the Redskins 24-3. The Patriots won, along with the Raiders. The Ravens lost. In the final day of the regular MLB season, the Yankees are moving on to the playoffs, lost. The Mets won. The Red Sox beat the Orioles. The Nationals won. The Giants and A's lost.
Global News 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street. And live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. We welcome in on this Monday morning Mark Chandler, Chief Market Strategist at Bannockburn Global Forex. Always good to talk with you, Mark. And I'm curious to get your insights as to where you think things stand right now on the trade dispute between the U.S. and China. How sensitive are the currency markets to reports like the one on Friday from Bloomberg News that the Trump administration is contemplating limits on portfolio flows into China?
Yeah, you know, Nathan, I think this is a big surprise. I mean, it's not so much that the thrust of the administration, sort of economic nationalism, caught the market by surprise, but just that they would think, they would even have the discussion about cutting off portfolio flows and things that seem to be far outside of the usual government's actions, like influencing how, say, the MSCI or other benchmarks weight Chinese stocks. I think it's also important to note, though, that this, like the previous talk about the discussions about intervention in the foreign exchange market, I'm filing this under thunder but no rain, in the sense that this is just the U.S. talking, and I think that as the options are really explored and the costs and benefits of the different actions are thought through, that the U.S. will not do any of these things, will not intervene in the foreign exchange market, will not really cut off and disrupt portfolio flows into China, though there could be something they do with the government pension funds. But in general, I think this is just, I think it's important that the U.S. try to distinguish this from the trade talks, but I don't think the Chinese will buy it.
Yeah, I'm curious, though. I mean, what does this do to the prospect of trade talks and getting toward a solid trade deal with China if we see this kind of escalation of, as you put it, thunder?
Yeah, I think that many of us looking at this think that the end goal is a trade agreement. I don't really think so. I think that the end goal of all this is to increase the disengagement between the U.S. and China, and the capital flows are just one part of it. Trade is another part of it. You know, I came across some interesting numbers that the U.S. is almost solely dependent on China for vitamins and antibiotics. And so, of course, it seems to me that it makes sense for the U.S. to become less dependent on that. And at the same time, probably from the Chinese point of view, it's also in their interest to become less dependent upon U.S. soy, U.S. pork. They can't do that right now, but I think that's the general movement that we're going to be moving.
If we do move that way to further decoupling between the U.S. and China, what do you see as the impact on the global economy were steps like that to be taken to their fruition?
Look, I think that some countries will stand to benefit. For example, in East Asia, it looks like Vietnam and Thailand are benefiting from some of the shifting of production, either planned or anticipated, out of China. And here, closer to the U.S., we're seeing Mexico really become the biggest U.S. trade partner, surpassing China and Canada. So I think there's going to be some winners and losers. I don't think that this really is the end of globalization as such. I just think that it represents a new phase in how the two largest economies in the world are interacting.
So then do you see certain emerging market currencies as more attractive in a scenario like that?
Well, you know, typically I would, but here's my problem, and that is that what drives the currency markets doesn't seem to be trade so much. I mean, maybe for some small countries, we have a single commodity like Peru or Chile, but for a diversified economy like Mexico, for example, it seems to me that capital flows are more important, and those are the kind of factors I'm watching. And in Mexico's case, for example, the central bank has begun easing rates, and I think that this is weighing a little bit on the Mexican peso, which acts as a proxy for emerging markets broadly.
Only about 30 seconds or so left here. So what will you be looking for next in the trade dispute between the U.S. and China? I know we've got another round of trade talks coming up in about a week and a half here. Do you see any kind of breakthrough then?
I don't, but I think the key to watch is whether the U.S. goes forward with the next round of tariffs scheduled for October 15th. Remember, they were originally for October 1st. Trump postponed them to the middle of the month. And if the talks go okay, maybe we could see those tariffs postponed again. I doubt it, but I think that's the lingering hope.
thank you for this. We always appreciate talking to you. That was Mark Chandler, Chief Market Strategist at Bannockburn Global Forex. And taking a look at the offshore yuan against the dollar right now, it is weaker on the session at 7.1428 for the offshore renminbi. As far as futures on Wall Street, they're pointing to a higher open on this Monday morning. S&P futures are higher by 10 points, Dow futures up 88, and NASDAQ futures are higher by 38 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. That brings us to 525 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty. NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher as we close out the last trading day of the quarter, while stocks in Asia close lower as investors try to interpret the latest trade developments between the U.S. and China.
Now, the Trump administration is issuing a partial denial to our report from last week that the White House is discussing the idea of imposing limits on U.S. investment in China. Sean Donnan broke the story for Bloomberg. He has more from our 99.1 studios in Washington.
What we're hearing is that this could drag on for months. I had one source tell me that the deliberations are about halfway done, and they're going to have to think hard and long about what exactly they go after.
Now a spokeswoman for the Treasury tells us there are no plans to stop Chinese companies from listing on U.S. exchanges. The statement refutes one part of our report but declines to comment on discussions about imposing limits on U.S. government pension funds investing in Chinese markets or putting caps on the value of Chinese companies included in indexes managed by U.S. firms. We get more from Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie in Beijing.
This would probably be the most significant move against China in terms of this economic battle since, of course, the blocking of Huawei from software and hardware components. Of course, it is still being deliberated, but nonetheless, it is going to make these trade talks that much more complicated, and it certainly will strengthen the hands of those hawks here in Beijing who have been arguing that this is all part of an attempt to undermine China's rise.
This all comes ahead of key trade negotiations scheduled for October 10th, just days before another increase in U.S. tariffs is set to take effect.
In other news, China's manufacturing sector improved in September, but data show factories still contracting. A manufacturing purchasing managers index rose to 49.8 last month.
The Bank of Japan cut bond buying for the fourth time this month. It was part of a regular operation as the BOJ continues with efforts to steepen the yield curve.
And in the UK, the economy shrank 0.2% in the second quarter. That confirms the previous estimate, making it the first quarterly contraction for Britain in 7 years.
Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 9.5 points. Dow futures up 81. NASDAQ futures up 36. The DAX in Germany, little change this morning. 10-year Treasury down 5/32, yield 1.69%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.64%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.25% or 68 cents at $55.23 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.8% or $12.70 at $14.93.70 an ounce, and the euro 1.0925 against the dollar. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff has confirmed the White House whistleblower has reached an agreement to testify before Congress. Schiff on ABC's This Week says even the White House report on the July phone call between President Trump and Ukraine's president shows Trump's request for help in investigating political rival Joe Biden and his son is extortion.
The president believes that it is his God-given right to shake down foreign leaders for help in his reelection. And he should not be encumbered by the public finding out about it. That's what has incensed the president.
Meanwhile, President Trump called for Schiff to be questioned for treason and demanded to meet the anonymous whistleblower. Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, also on ABC's This Week.
He called him up and he said, I want you to investigate these charges of corruption. If he hadn't asked them to investigate Biden, he would have violated Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution.
ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says we lost a hero. NYPD officer Brian Mulkeen died early Sunday in the Bronx while grappling with an armed man. Police say Mulkeen, who was 33, was shot three times, possibly with his own gun. Officers killed the suspect. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman warned that war between his country and Iran would lead to a total collapse of the global economy. Bin Salman, on CBS's 60 Minutes, also says the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi was a mistake by agents of the Saudi government.
This was a heinous crime, but I take full responsibility as a leader in Saudi Arabia, especially since it was committed by individuals working for the Saudi government.
The Crown Prince says, though, he did not order Khashoggi's murder. Repairs to a key New York City subway tunnel damaged during Superstorm Sandy is on track to be finished even sooner than expected. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the L train renovation between Brooklyn and Manhattan is now expected to be completed by April, ahead of the 15-month projection of how long it would take. Cars will be banned from Lower Manhattan's 14th Street, a major east-west thoroughfare, starting Thursday. It's part of an 18-month experiment to speed crawling crosstown travel. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The waiting is finally over for the Yankees, who won the American League East by an amazing 7 games. Despite losing the season finale 6-1 in Texas, the Yankees finished with the second-best record in the American League behind the Astros, who won a big league-best 107 games. New York had 103. Yankees host the Twins in the American League Division Series Game 1 on Friday. Tampa Bay visits Oakland in the wild-card game on Tuesday for the right to then play Houston. The Mets, they provided their fans some excitement on the final day of the year.
I want to know the count. Here's the pitch. Swing and a drive, well hit, right field. Back goes Ortega at the wall. How do you like that? Put it in the box. Dom Smith with a pinch hit home run wins the season finale for the Mets.
Mets radio 7-6. They walk off Atlanta to finish with 86 wins and sport future rookie of the year, Pete Alonso, who set the record clubbing 53 home runs, one more than Aaron Judge's rookie campaign. Now, the gridiron, it's been quite a turnaround for the Giants. They've officially handed it off to Daniel Jones last week in a come-from-behind win, but then backed it up with even more firepower on Sunday, torching Washington 24-3, which included a pick six from Jabril Peppers. Jones on the adjustments needed.
If we're going to keep winning, we got to, you know, address a number of things, and we got to improve a number of things as a team if we want to keep it going. So I think it's important that we understand that.
Jones finished with 225 yards and a touchdown, while Wayne Gallman had 63 yards rushing and a score, filling in for Saquon Barkley. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, Rob, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on McDonald's investment in big data. Also in this week's issue, what a crash out of the EU might look like for the UK. Joe Mays wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
So we've tried to set out what that first 24 hours might look like if it is the case we end up in a no-deal Brexit. And remember, this is what Boris Johnson is promising to do if he can't get a deal with Brussels.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week on newsstands now and online at businessweek.com. Terminal customers can subscribe to the magazine at MAG Go, and you can listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. It's 5:38 on Wall Street, and that's time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Khoury. Good morning, Ed.
Nathan, WeWork's landlords in New York are preparing for any drop in demand from the company. In Manhattan, the company has 7.2 million square feet of space, according to CBRE Group. Doubts about WeWork's future have emerged after its plans to go public this month collapsed. A lightning strike caused power to go out in Atlantic City Sunday morning, putting several casinos out of power. The press of Atlantic City, though, says they were unlikely to lose money from slot machines. They use battery-powered, uninterruptible power supplies. Loyalty cards also record all casino machine play. A ShopRite grocery in West Hartford will close in late November. Store officials say a challenging business climate, including the state's new higher minimum wage, made the store unprofitable. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thanks, Ed. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Martin DeCaro on KTRH in Houston. I'm reporting on why the city is said to have a bad work-life balance.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, Mondelez will test out a new line of chocolate that will be marketed to chefs as having a fruitier taste.
I'm Caroline Hepke on Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're reporting from the Conservative Conference in Manchester as Boris Johnson's cabinet sets out plans for public spending.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting the CEO of Robert Bosch says the auto industry has to brace for many more years of stagnation.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another item we're watching, a smattering of corporate earnings on the way. We get results from seven companies in the S&P 500 this week, including Lennar, PepsiCo, Constellation Brands, and Costco. Bloomberg customers can check the earnings calendar on the terminal by typing ACDR Go. And another big name has fallen in the retail apocalypse. Fashion chain Forever 21 has filed for bankruptcy protection with liabilities up to $10 billion. The Los Angeles-based chain has more than 800 stores around the world, and it plans to close most of them in Europe and Asia. This is Bloomberg. And it's just before 5:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we talk about the crisis in German manufacturing. Will it drag the Eurozone into recession? We'll speak next with Bloomberg opinion columnist Chris Bryant in Berlin. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are higher. Stocks in Europe are a little changed to higher now. They've been jumping around a bit. Investors are struggling to interpret the latest escalation in trade rivalry between the world's two largest economies. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 12 points this morning. Dow futures up 90. NASDAQ futures up 43. The DAX in Germany this morning up less than a tenth of a percent. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 1.69%. The yield on the 2-year is at 1.64%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.2% or 67 cent at $55.24 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.8% or $12.10 at $14.94.30 an ounce. The euro 1.0927 against the dollar. British pound 1.2313. And the yen is at 107.94. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, says his panel will hear very soon from the whistleblower at the heart of the impeachment inquiry against President Trump. California Democrat Adam Schiff says that the person has agreed to testify, but that some security details remain to be worked out. Meanwhile, President Trump is demanding to meet with the anonymous whistleblower. Hong Kong had one of the most violent days in 17 weeks of demonstrations. Protesters clashed with police, throwing bricks in response to tear gas. In the NFL, the Giants beat the Redskins 24-3. The Patriots won, along with the Raiders. The Ravens lost. In the final day of the regular MLB season, the Yankees are moving on to the playoffs, lost. The Mets won. The Red Sox beat the Orioles. The Nationals won. The Giants and A's lost. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Opinion, informed perspectives, and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news.
And it is now 5:49 on Wall Street. We check in now with Bloomberg Opinion. Columnist Chris Bryant joins us now from our Berlin bureau. Chris has a piece out this morning about the crisis brewing in German manufacturing. We have seen the economic indicators come out of Germany. Chris, how serious is this downturn?
Yes, good morning. Well, I'd say it's starting to become very serious. It's concentrated so far almost entirely in the manufacturing sector. This is obviously a key strength of the German economy. More than 20% of national output in Germany comes from manufacturing. That's much higher than countries like the United States and the UK, where we've seen the gradual erosion of the industrial base. And, of course, very export-dependent, and due to a combination of factors, not least nascent trade wars, Brexit and so forth, exports are starting to weaken, and this is hurting, above all, the manufacturing sector. And the data from the manufacturing sector in the first half of this year and continues to be very, very bad. A 14% drop in auto exports, a 12% drop in car output, and it seems to me, above all, the car suppliers are really the ones that are suffering, because what you have here is not just a cyclical slowdown in demand, but also structural factors underpinning this, not least the gradual shift that we have away from gasoline and diesel vehicles towards electric, and that's hitting the supplier sector very hard.
Now, as you write this morning, the numbers themselves aren't as bad as they were at the height of the Great Recession in 2009, but you say they could prove longer lasting in terms of the pain for the German economy. What do you mean by that? Why do you say that?
Well, the thing about the 2009 recession was there was an immediate bounce back. It was a dramatic fall, really, really painful. But then the economy got back on its feet very quickly. Demand picked up, stimulus at home, China stimulus. This time, the pain isn't as great. Industrial production down only about 4%. That compares to about 20% drop in 2009. So that's good news. The problem is that we're really not expecting it much growth going forward. Robert Bosch, which is one of the biggest car parts suppliers in the world, gave an interview over the weekend. The CEO said that he didn't expect any growth whatsoever in autos production until about 2025. Now, obviously, if there's no top-line growth and you've got pressure from the car makers, who are obviously driving a very hard bargain at the moment as they seek to keep costs down to cope with their own very high spending, then the suppliers are getting squeezed. And what we've seen already in Germany so far this year is a smattering of insolvencies, mostly, as I say, in the supplier sector. These are companies that were already pretty weak for whatever homemade problems they had, and those companies tend to be the ones that fall over as soon as life gets tough. But I think there's an expectation that this will continue in coming ones. And what we've noticed as well is that there's been an uptick in people having to work shorter hours. In Germany, it's very common practice. As soon as demand falls off, then companies cut the hours of their workers. They keep them on rather than laying them off, reduce hours, and then they hope that things will get better after a short slowdown. But as I say, my fear is that actually these things will prove quite enduring, because, of course, the structural factors which you talked about, digitalization, which means essentially Germany in future is going to need a lot more people writing software, perhaps not so many people building products, and also the electric vehicle drive. And the thing about electric vehicles is they're actually fairly straightforward to build. So a combustion engine is a hugely complex thing, contains I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of parts. An electric motor and the associated drivetrain are actually fairly straightforward, doesn't need anywhere near as much labor. So as we see that shift, Germany's industrial heartlands are the ones that are really going to feel the pain.
Bloomberg Opinion columnist Chris Bryant with us from our Berlin Bureau. Chris, thank you. The piece this morning in Bloomberg Opinion, A Crisis is Brewing in German Manufacturing. You can read it and more from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or on the terminal, type OPIN, go. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by the American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute resolved faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
A class action lawsuit against Volkswagen begins today in Germany. 450,000 owners of VW's diesel vehicles want compensation for buying vehicles that polluted more than they were supposed to. U.S. residential solar installer Vivint Solar is being investigated for violations of federal securities laws. The allegations are Vivint forced homeowners' signatures on contracts and opened bogus accounts. And lawyers for Forever 21 were busy this weekend. The once-hot teen clothing chain filed for bankruptcy, hurt by rising mall rents and fewer customers.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now another legal story we're watching this morning. The copyright battle over Led Zeppelin's iconic Stairway to Heaven. The dispute has garnered an en banc hearing at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, with 11 judges set to decide who wrote the song's famous opening passage. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to intellectual property litigator Terrence Ross, who's a partner at Katten, Muchin and Rosenman.
Terry, a lot of people listen to that introductory riff to Stairway to Heaven and the song Taurus and say it sounds a lot alike. But there's a lot more to it than that. The sound recordings weren't even played for the jury.
And that's the key here, June, that's before the Ninth Circuit en banc. Should the district court judge, the trial judge, have allowed the recordings to be played to the jury? He did not. And the reason he did not allow the recordings to be played is because when these two songs came out, they were prior to 1972, there was no copyright on recordings. And so musical artists such as Jimmy Page and Led Zeppelin, or this band Taurus and their lead singer Randy Wolf, they got copyright on the sheet music and not on the recordings. And so the trial judge allowed the jury to see the respective sheet music, and he allowed a musical expert to play those sheet music notes and did not allow the jury to actually hear the recorded music because there was no copyright on them. And that's what the dispute is all about.
A lot of the judges on this Ninth Circuit en banc panel seemed really skeptical that a new trial was necessary, and they were peppering the plaintiff's lawyer with questions. And one of the judges, Judge Andrew Hurwitz, said, "You've got to get your sound recording in to win, don't you? You lose the case unless you do 100 times out of 100.
You just don't know in an oral argument whether a particular judge is asking you the question that they really need to have answered or whether they're playing devil's advocate. I clerked for the D.C. Circuit. My judge used to always ask the tough questions of both sides, no matter how he might come out eventually. So we can't always look at the questioning from the judges on a panel and read the tea leaves and see how this court come out. But it did seem to bother a lot of the judges that there's no copyright on the recordings, and yet the plaintiff wanted the recordings to be played to the jury.
And that's Terrence Ross, a partner at Katten, Muchin and Rosenman, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures are up 12 points this morning. Dow futures up 89. NASDAQ futures up 45. The 10-year Treasury down 4/32. Yield 1.69%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.